Okay. Good morning, colleagues. It's now exactly 10 o'clock,
Recording in
which is a
progress.
starting time. I'm still short of a few members, so we'll wait for a few minutes. Thank you.
Recording stopped.
Good morning again, colleagues, on this day, the 6th of March, 2023. Let me acknowledge and welcome members here at M46 and on the virtual platform. Acknowledge the public protector here at M46 and her legal team led by Advocate Both, the evidence leaders, Advocates Bauer and Mayosi, members of the media with us, our entire support staff, their various duties. And lastly, but not least, those who brought us here, the members of the public and their various platforms, YouTube 408. You all welcome today. We are proceeding with our inquiry with the next witness today, which will be introduced very shortly by Ms. Fatima Ibrahim. We have this witness the whole of today up until midday tomorrow. And so we're going to do our business within that timeline. Thank you very much for your attention. Without any delay, I'm going to ask Ms. Ibrahim to do the preliminaries, introduce the witness, and then we start our proceedings. Thank you. Over to you, Ms. Ibrahim.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, the witness for today is Professor Madonsela, the former public protector. Prof. Madonsela, can you hear us?
Yes, Advocate, I can hear you.
May I please ask that you switch on your camera so that we can... Oh, I see you now. Thank you. I'm going to be administering your oath. Prof. Madonsela, you have been invited, subject to the provisions of Section 16 of the Powers, Privileges and Immunities of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act of 2004, to appear before this committee as a witness and to answer questions in respect of the committee's inquiry into the removal of the public protector, Advocate Mukwebane. Please be informed that by law you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily all the questions lawfully put to you or to produce any documents that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of the inquiry, notwithstanding the fact that the answer or the document could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or civil proceedings or damages. You are, however, protected in that evidence given under oath or affirmation before a House or committee may not be used against you in any court or place outside of Parliament, except in criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to the evidence or documents required in these proceedings. Please be aware further that in terms of Section 17(2) of the Powers Act, a person who willfully furnishes a House or committee with information or makes a statement before it which is false or misleading commits an offence and is liable to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 2 years. You are now going to be required to take an oath or to affirm that the evidence you are about to give is truthful. You may choose either the oath or affirmation. What is your preference?
The oath, ma'am.
May I please ask that you raise your right hand and repeat after me? I swear that the evidence I shall give.
I swear that the evidence I shall give.
Shall be the truth.
Shall be the truth.
The whole truth.
The whole truth.
And nothing but the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Thank you, ma'am. Chair, the witness is now duly sworn in.
Thank you, Ms. Ibrahim, and welcome back Professor Thulisile Nomkhosi Madonsela to the inquiry. This now seems to be a real start than the first start we had. So welcome you back. I am aware, before I invite Advocate Mbofu, that you had requested to make a few remarks, and I now allow you to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson, and honourable members of the committee and colleagues. I appreciate the privilege to appear before you. Nonetheless, I come before you reluctantly because you've asked me to respond to questions primarily on two cases that have been extensively dealt with by the courts. And therefore, my reluctance to appear before this committee had nothing to do with lack of respect for this important pillar of our democracy. It was because of apprehension that I'll be put in a situation where we are rehashing what the courts have decided about this South African Reserve Bank matter, also known as the CX matter, and also about the Freddie Derry matter. I therefore apologize if there's a sense that has been given that I was reluctant to appear. I secondly would like to just place on record that it is not true that the delay was primarily because of arguments about whether CX is spelled with an S as opposed to a C, which was a mistake that the Secretariat could correct me on without lawyers being involved, or that the matters that were the focal point were two instead of one. The crux of the confusion that I was placed in is the fact that the lawyers of Advocate Busisiwe Mkhwebane sent me a litany of questions that when I looked at the charge sheet, I couldn't find any reason whatsoever why I should answer those questions. And I responded accordingly, asking relevance and also indicating that to the extent that they need that information, I'm not the person who has the information. The information is with the public protector in the archives and staff members. So that was the first concern. The lawyers wrote back, yes, they questioned whether CX was spelled with an S or a C, and the small matter of whether the cases were one or two. But the crux of it was still about what are the questions that I'm supposed to answer? The questions about the previous questions, the new letter provided new questions. Again, my response was to ask, what's the relevance of these questions? Is this my impeachment process? Because if it is, then this is the wrong forum. I was protector until the end of, until the 14th of October 2016. If it is indeed that somebody is accusing me of anything that I did wrongly, then this is not the right forum. This is a forum about my successor, Advocate Busisiwe Mkhwebane. If Parliament needs to question me on what I did or didn't do, we have to have a separate investigation. We can't turn an investigation into parallel investigation. And in any event, I do not think that Parliament still has jurisdiction to question me over those matters. But should there be merit in questioning me, which I think there's no merit in any event, the right forum might be at this stage the public protector, where I am reported to the public protector as a former public protector who did something wrong. Or it could be the Human Rights Commission, but certainly this is not the right forum. And in terms of the statement, I placed on record a statement that I've put before you that says the basic things of who I am. I'm a professor of law, currently employed at Stellenbosch University, and I'm the director of the Center for Social Justice. I have indicated that all of the facts that are contained here are, to my knowledge, true and correct. I must indicate, though, that I don't have access to the investigative reports, and therefore, where there are questions about dates, the public protector kept an extensive register that will indicate who I met, when I met them, what documents were received in that office, on what date, and when those documents left the office. And on the two matters, I have just indicated that all I can confirm is that I was the lead investigator at the commencement of the CX investigation. Talk about an attempt at rectitude being turned to look like tepitude. That's a classical case in the CX investigation. I conducted this investigation initially with a trainee investigator by the name of Tevane, who then left to be with the NPA. How did I end up doing an investigation? The public protector office never did investigations. They were done by staff, and I would come in at the level of matters that we call special attention matters, SAM. But again, as a supervisor, overall supervisor or supervisor general, as an investigator general, after these matters had gone through chief investigators, executive managers, and then coming to my desk. This investigation was rejected by the staff of the public protector when it came in. I can confirm the one time it was rejected, but it may have been more than once that it was rejected. I only came to investigate it because when I attended the World Justice Forum, I met Advocate Paul Hoffman, and we sat together on a bus, and he convinced me that there was adequate information that showed that this is an easy matter, and the bank concerned had admitted that it owes this money, and that I didn't need to investigate anything. I was told that there were documents, but as a protector, of course, any document that you give, then you still have to authenticate and you have to conduct your own investigation. So we did this investigation with Tevane, which meant investigating it over and above my overall responsibilities as a protector, which accounts for the delays in this investigation. And eventually Tevane left, and then I was left alone, and there was no proceeding with this investigation. I couldn't bother staff because we had a triaging system. There was an intake assessment committee that duly assessed and found this investigation not worthy to be investigated for several matters that firstly, the events complained of occurred before the public protector was established. Even if the money was recoverable, it would have prescribed. Also, it was firstly an issue of jurisdiction given the fact that the matters preceded the existence of the public. So why did I decide to investigate it regardless? I've already indicated that Advocate Paul Hoffman convinced me that there's already sort of relative agreement. And also that if this money is recovered, it could make a difference in terms of the challenges of funding mainly social and economic rights, such as education, health, RDP housing, etc. Then how did I overcome the fact that the public protector only came into being in 1995 and this matter happened before that? We overcame the hurdle by looking at only whether government did process the CX investigation report and dealt with it properly. And to the extent that it did not, whether that was improper. And so our focus, therefore, was not on the original loan, lifeboat, or whatever people may call it. Our focus was on what happened after 1998. And of course, it turned out that it was a very complex matter. A lot of people that appeared before me wanted us to investigate the original loan or gift or whatever each one of them called the original transaction. I might also indicate that before me, there had been investigations by Justice Dennis Davis, Heath, etc. And therefore, we had to distinguish what we were doing and why would we repeat this? And that's why you will see in the investigation report that we looked at that. So regarding what happened afterwards, the courts have already found that the report that was issued was broader than the original focus. The courts have already found that the remedial action to change the constitution was neither part of the investigation nor is within the remit of the public. And there's nothing really I can do about that, given the fact that that's a decision of the court. From my side, I left no final report or approved a provisional report. But I've looked at the documents that purport to be documents from my desk. They are totally changed. Again,
just a pause, Professor Madonsela. I have a hand from a member here, Honorable Maneli.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Apologies for the disruption, if it is. But I just wanted to be sure in terms of the notes I take as to where we are. Because I understood you, Chair, because I'm not addressing the witness now, but you, was that there were to be opening remarks, and then we then get to actual evidence and so on. I'm raising it because having listened, some of the matters that are raised are matters of evidence that would have come before the committee, which we may need to interact with. So if you can just indicate, which will also help us with time also, to what point would those opening remarks be done.
Okay.
Thanks, Chair.
No, thank you, Honorable Maneli. Before I respond, I'm told there's another hand. So, okay, it's lowered down. Thank you, Honorable Maneli. I did observe that Professor Madonsela did make opening remarks and also has begun to take us through the statement in a way. So I was in 2 minds whether it was, in any case, we're still going to have to do that. And with Advocate Mpofu also, just like me, still listening, I thought we should allow her to complete that. And then, even though it was just to clarify your point, it is now explanations into the statement. I'm aware of that, that she's taking us through beyond the opening remarks. And I'm just saying, I was just using my question to allow her to continue to place everything. Because at the end, when Advocate Mpofu starts, he might have started there on that issue. Maybe that helps his time also. So I have, unless you are objecting, then I'll have to object
not,
to
not
that.
Objecting, sir, with the clarity that we are now on another level, as long as that. Thank you. Can proceed.
Thank you. I think I hope that that helps to clarify. We're just following. So because having received and read the statement, we can see where she is speaking into the statement. So that was clarity sought, Professor Madonsela, from a member. As I indicated, there being no objection, I'm going to allow you to continue.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. If Honorable Members would prefer me to stop here,
Chair,
I am happy to do so.
Chair, my hand is up.
Just pause, Advocate Madonsela. Honorable Maotwe.
Yeah, no, thank you. I had my hand up earlier on, you are correct. I lowered it when the Honorable Member almost covered me, which is a question you did not answer, to say how long is this address going to take, because you indicated that we've got the witness today and half of tomorrow, so we don't have time, Chair, because Advocate Mpofu must still come in, Advocate Bauer must still come in, and as members must still come in. So how long are you giving her the time allocated to her, like you always do, Chair, with everybody, including the PP and Advocate Bauer. So let's just understand how much time are you giving here so that we can manage our time properly. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Maute. That's fair. We're almost halfway there in the middle of it, I think. Professor Madonsela, I think the issue now is perhaps so that there's an indication from members how far you are and so on, but members are not saying you must stop, but it's just those clarities. So I would want you to continue.
Thank you, Chair, person, and thank you, Honourable Members. I will try and read through the statement as is so as not to delay that. I left no final report or approved provisional report. I found that the principal debt of the final loan had been paid, but interest not. I considered it legally impermissible to claim the money, considering that prescription had been raised as a legal defense much earlier. The tone, scope, findings and remedial action in both the issued provisional report and final report differ materially from drafts the investigator had worked on and submitted to me, though I did not approve sale and requested further changes. A, the State Security Agency was never involved in the investigation, except for an interview with Mr. Billy Masetla regarding why his institution got involved in the original contract with CX and how the process unfolded. And that was clarified by Ms. Masetla when I met him on the 22nd of March 2013. Strangely though, after leaving documents with a colleague from the South African mission in London, which had been given to me by CX's Michael Oatley at an interview, this colleague accompanied me to the the documents arrived from the State Security Agency, opened and with a note from the State Security Agency Director General. They were meant to be transported by DECOM. I met Michael Oatley on the 15th of September 2015. And we agreed then that I would leave the documents he had given me and further documents he was going to give me with the colleague from the embassy. And the record of that meeting was also kept by that colleague and later sent with the box that came already opened from the State Security Agency. Key changes that I've observed in the final CX report include the remedial action regarding changing the powers of the Reserve Bank, which was not an issue, as the issue concerned lending and debt collecting practices. Regarding the Freddie Dairy investigation, I confirm that, one, the investigation was conducted by the Public Protector Regional Office in Bloemfontein during my term. Two, investigator and her team struggled with drafts being sent back from my desk and from their peers in the think tank. Presumably, because the investigator had been doing service failure or early resolution nature cases whilst at national office. And until my time, regional offices did not conduct investigations on complex matters, particularly involving corruption and related financial impropriety allegations. Three, they still failed to meet the standards in the standard operating protocol, which I personally developed and issued as a handbook. And even after training the team with the same tool, one of the key reasons was omission of names and failure to conduct a forensic investigation, which is compulsory in the SOP in matters where corrupt relationships are alleged or suspected. When Mr. Samuels, took over as regional representative, I asked him to take the investigation over. My concluding remarks touch on the staffing arrangements in the office, which an arrangement is basically where primarily the domain of the deputy, I found it so, I left it so, and the CEO. One, I inherited a well-run institution that had been built virtually from scratch and improved step by step by my predecessors. Through learning and growing together, we kept improving the system, guided by Seneca's assertion that, quote, will I not walk in the steps of my predecessors? I will indeed use the ancient road. But if I find another route that is more direct and has fewer ups and downs, I will stake out that one. Quote in William Stevens, 2020. Three, two of the investigation guardrails I personally developed, followed by peer review by the team, was the Handbook on Administrative Investigations and Public Protector Mandate Book. So the Handbook on Administrative Investigations was a standard operating protocol that investigators had to comply with. Before then, we had guidelines, and the feeling was that guidelines are guidelines, and therefore to have proper guardrails that people could be held account on the basis of, we needed a standard operating protocol. Before then, we also had developed a public protector handbook to make sure that we know which version of which law to apply and which laws were applicable to us. Four, I feel I did what I could to collaborate with colleagues towards guardrailing the ombudsman institution globally, which included establishing the African Ombudsman Research Center, AIOC, a process commenced by immediate predecessor, Advocate Lawrence Mushwana, and personally suggesting and developing the O.R. Tambo Declaration on Minimum Standards for Effective Ombudsman Institution.
Professor Madonsela, Advocate Bofo.
Okay, yeah. Good morning, Chairperson, and everyone. I'm as serious to what is actually taking place now. I think the issues raised by the members are quite valid. If the witness is just going to be reading her statement or reading it out, I think the process here has been that once a statement is tabled, everyone can read the statement, and that the evidence is led in the form of questions by someone.
Okay.
I think let's get into that.
All right. Yes, that's what we attended to earlier. I'm just going to ask her to conclude. She's about to conclude. Thank you, Advocate Mbofu.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
It's just two lines or two paragraphs. Five, I resisted being spied on by the State Security Agency through sudden repeated requests to vet me as I was finalizing the Waterkloof landing incidents by the Gupta family. What I could not prevent is it landing with the CX box and flash disk, all of which had been opened on arrival. I've included this because there have been questions around the CX investigation and the involvement of the State Security Agency. I just want to confirm here that it was never involved. The only person that was interviewed on the 22nd of March 2013 was Billy Masetla, simply because I needed to know what was the basis for the State Security Agency getting involved and how the process unfolded, and he clarified that. And lastly, we work as a team, building and executing systems that tried to balance rigor with promptitude, gave priority to what we refer to as Google Dlamini cases, while ensuring that the investigation standard applied and duty of care was uniform. It is my considered view that the above is all that is relevant in the light of the Section 194 investigation. I therefore do not believe I should be asked a lot of the questions that were in the two letters that were sent to me. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Madonsela, for firstly those remarks and walking us into the statement as well. We are now going to invite Advocate Mpofu to interact with the witness. And I'm going to ask Advocate Mpofu, there's a bit of your time would have been taken. So you returned time last week, so it seems that we're going to have to return some time to you. It's very quick. But we want to start with you now, and perhaps we can stretch it to 3 and up to 4 o'clock this afternoon. Again, if you can save time and give us back, we are happy to receive that. But over to you, Advocate Boff.
Thank you, Chair. Well, I may expect you to return the favor in the spirit of give and take. Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Advocate Madonsela, or Professor. Would you prefer to be called Professor or Advocate?
Whatever is easy for you, Advocate. Okay. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Good morning, ma'am. No, that's fine. So please don't mind if we shift from the prof to the advocate. The Advocate Mukhwebane rolls easier on the tongue because that's how we referred to you for a long time. But so it will be no disrespect if we use that title. Okay. Now, maybe, Chair, we should do it like this. I think, in fairness, I'll take much shorter time just to put context to how we're going to approach this. Now, Professor, I don't think that there's going to be much quibbling between you and me regarding the scope of what we're going to cover. And I'll explain to you just now why I don't think so. So there's a lot of time and energy that has been spent even this morning about scoping and whether these questions are legitimate or relevant and so on. And we all accept here that according to the directives, the chairperson is the final arbiter of relevance. You understand that?
I do understand, but you are paid for every word you utter. I am losing time for every word I utter. So as professionals, we also have to be self-regulating about what we ask and what we discuss without waiting for the chairperson to tell us.
No, anyway, you're wrong, madam. I'm not paid for every word I utter, but I forgive you for that because you wouldn't know. But that's fine. I was simply saying that in terms of the directives of this particular committee, the final arbiter, for better or for worse, is the chairperson of relevance. I'm just informing
it
you.
It must be for better.
Probably for better, yeah. But not always. I'm informing you. All I was asking is whether you understand that. I'm not debating the point with you. It's in the directive.
Yes, but if I think you're asking me an irrelevant question, I will say so.
Okay, so let's wait until that happens. For now, I'm just asking you if you understand.
I fully do, sir. Thank you.
You do. Thank you. That's better. Okay. Now, my understanding, therefore, is that subject to issues of the validity or otherwise of your affidavits or whatever version thereof. But the reason why I'm saying I don't think there's going to be much quibbling between you and me is that my understanding is that your statement is really anchored by three paragraphs. Where you say that your statement, paragraph four, sorry, that will be, therefore it will be, bundle age, Madonsela folder, the final affidavit or the third affidavit, 31.6. Yes, paragraph four. There you say that the statement sets out a summary of what you intend to share with the committee. And that's the summary that you've just given now. So in other words, what you've put in the statement is just a summary, not the full version, correct?
It was a summary, but
yes.
Sir, I have now been given an opportunity to present what I could, and I have done so.
Good. So that's the first anchor paragraph, paragraph four. And then you then refer to the chairperson's letter wherein you were invited to, among other things, or rather you were told that you deal with issues which are relevant to the motion. I think on that we all agree, correct?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Now, but the most important paragraph, I think, is paragraph 10, which is your last paragraph, which you just articulated now, where you say that in my considered view, the above is all that is relevant in the light of the Section 194 inquiry and the contents of the letter the chairperson of the committee. So everything above paragraph 10 is what you call all that is relevant, in your view at least. As I said, we might differ on what's relevant and not relevant. But at the very least, your version is that whatever is on from paragraph 1 to 9 is all that is relevant, correct?
As a summary, yes, sir.
Yes, good. Now then, that's perfect. Because in my view then, unless if there's any difference between you and me, which I will indicate to the chair towards the end, I am happy to proceed on the basis that we start with what you and I agree is all that is relevant. And if at the end there's still one or two issues on which we quibble, then obviously we'll refer that to the chair to determine. I think that's a fair way of proceeding, also so that you and I will be on the same page. So we will, for the first part, then be governed by your statement, correct? Are you happy with that?
Very happy. Thank you, sir. Great.
Perfect. All right. Now that we've got that clear, I said it was subject to determining whether there's even a statement before this committee or an affidavit or not. We are at this stage confused as to whether there's an affidavit. As I understand, you are reading now from the third version of your statement, correct?
As far as I know, there's only one version of my statement. And again, Advocate Mpofu, I did say that you paid for every word you utter. There's only one version of my statement. And that version was sent on the 25th with a very tight deadline because of the quibbling between lawyers of Advocate Mkhwebane and myself about what exactly should I cover. Finally, on Saturday, I was given the deadline of the 24th, and I requested that it be moved. I think it was the 22nd. I requested that it be moved to the 25th, which was a Saturday. And against several odds, including load shedding, I sent the statement, and only to discover that there were small typos on the statement. And those typos were corrected, and a corrected statement was sent. Nothing in the statement changed, except maybe you could say the most substantial change in the statement was saying Advocate Paul Hoffman is advocate and SC. Everything else was just spelling corrections. But if you want to make an issue out of that, and we use taxpayers' money to quibble about that, be my guest, sir.
Okay. No, I will be a guest, madam. Especially if there's a possibility of criminal conduct, I think the taxpayer will be very interested in that. But, okay, let's just take it step by step. Am I correct that in your letter of 20th of February, you invited the public protector's team to indicate what you called truly relevant matters before you prepare your statement that where she still needed answers from you? That's what you invited the team to do, correct?
Yes, I did.
Right. And in response to that invitation, the public protector's attorney then wrote a letter to you on the following day, the 21st of February, firstly indicating to you that you had made a mistake in indicating that there was only one issue, but that there were two. The issue about the spelling is a non-issue, really. The substance was that you had indicated that you were only going to be testifying on the CX matter, and we indicated to you that even on the version of the chairperson, which we didn't agree with, you were supposed to do two matters.
So you harbored that issue on the 1st, and I guess you were paid for that time. I dealt with it earlier. I don't know what else must we do with it.
I think
Can I just finish also? But
yeah.
My answer is yes. There was quibbling about... No. You don't cut me like that, sir. There was quibbling about that, but in my earlier statement, please don't talk over me. In my earlier statement, I had also indicated that you compacted the quibbling to those two matters. Yet the real confusion was around whose inquiry is this. And all of those vague statements where you said, oh, courts have made these remarks about your cases, what is your comment on that? So I wanted to know, number one, am I being investigated now? And two, which cases? Must I go all over the internet to find out what have courts said about my cases? And three, I specifically mentioned to you that as far as I know, no court has accused me of not understanding the Constitution or being dishonest. Those were in those letters, sir. We can't reduce it to how I spelled CS and the letter of the two cases.
Okay, ma'am, can I ask you to please firstly listen to the question and then just answer the question that is asked of you. Then we will get somewhere because on your theory, I don't only get paid by words I utter, but even the words I listen to. So let's not make them too many. I'm asking you a very simple question, that in response to your invitation for us to indicate which other areas other than CX that we needed answers to. Number one, we indicated to you that the other issue is Frede, because that's common cause that was from the chair. That's what we did at paragraph 6 of our response, correct?
Yes.
Thanks. That's now we're getting somewhere. And then the other issue where we corrected you was to say that it is false to state, as you stated in your statement, that the public protector's team had, quote, forbidden the evidence leaders from assisting you with a statement. And we said, please indicate to us, we advise you of that non-existence fact. That was the second issue that we raised in that response, correct?
Yes.
And as it happened, the secretariat, I think, without our knowledge, had also sent you a letter indicating that that allegation was incorrect. Right?
Yes, sir.
Thank
that
you.
Was my mistake, which I admitted.
Yes, and which you apologized for, which apology was accepted. So,
and which you dealt with last week and you're dealing with again today.
Yes. Did you give evidence last week?
Well, it's on the record.
All right. Okay. Anyway, so at least we settled the fact that it was at your invitation that we indicated those areas. Good. Now let's come back to this issue of the statements. You were aware that...
I'm sorry, sir. With your permission.
Yeah.
You see, giving us
with the chair's permission.
With your permission, chairperson.
I
advocate Mkhwebane, let's not mislead the committee by narrowing. If you're going to quote that letter, put the whole letter on record. Because yes, it was at my invitation, but in response to your previous letter, where I was saying I am confused about all of these matters that you've raised. And this is what the chair says I should do, and you are saying I must do something else. And you ended up actually providing new issues instead of clarifying my question. So it's important that we give those who are going to judge this matter context and not be selective about the evidence we put on record. You must bear in mind that I'm representing myself here, and therefore when I feel that there's a need to put all facts on the record, I will say so with the permission of the chairperson.
Right. Okay. Now, you are also aware that there was, shall we say, confusion as to whether you were called as a witness by the committee or by the public protector. Were you aware of that?
No, I wasn't. I was very clear from the beginning that only the public protector wanted me as a witness, because the committee had discussed with me earlier the possibility of me being a witness, and that was abandoned because my response, as I said in my earlier statement, was there's nothing I can say that can change what the court has said on the matters that you want me to be a witness on.
All right. Okay, fine. Okay, maybe then the confusion was not on your part, but I suppose you're saying you are still clear. When you received a letter from the chairperson dated 9 February 2023, where it says the committee has offered assistance to all witnesses who have requested it, but such assistance is limited to the drafting of a statement under the auspices of the evidence leaders as settled and sworn by yourself. The committee will certainly not be in a position to provide you with any assistance beyond this, and so on. And also further down, the chairperson, should you require the assistance of the evidence leaders to prepare a statement, kindly contact the committee secretary. Even with that, you still regarded yourself as a witness just for the public protector. Am I right?
Absolutely. My understanding was that I've been called by the public protector, but I am a witness owned by no one. Read my letters. In all of the letters, I say I do not understand myself to be owned by any particular group. Well, I'm paraphrasing myself here. I teach on investigations. I wrote the investigations manual of the public protector. I also teach on commissions of inquiry. So my understanding is that witnesses are really there to help find the truth wherever it is. They're not supposed to be embedded with any party. And this was what I said in my letter to Advocate Mukwabane's letter, and his lawyers.
Yes.
Didn't myself owned by anyone, say.
No, that's fine. That's fine. I've already said that the confusion must have been on our part only, but I'm just explaining to you where it came from. Well, your information in this particular inquiry, when the evidence leaders call a person, they prepare the statement for that person, even when they subpoena the person, in this case, Mr. Kekana, then they prepare a statement for that person and lead that person. And the same with us, when we have called a person, as we did with Ms. Mviana, we prepare a statement with her and lead that person.
May I say a word? No, sorry, sir. With the chairperson's permission, read the first letter from the attorneys, the one that I missed for a long time. It didn't say it was compulsory that I should be assisted by the attorneys. It said that if I so wish to be assisted, I can be assisted.
Yes.
So what you're saying, you seemingly saying something different from what the letter said. Even the last letter said, if I so wish, the assistance may be provided. And I chose not to be provided with that assistance. And I insisted that I want to do this independently.
No, that's also not entirely correct. You said that you preferred to do the statement with the evidence leaders, didn't you?
Well, for the first time, the first letter, it was with the evidence leaders because they had already offered and we were going to do it on the 20th. But my last letter indicated that I prefer to do it independently. No, my last two letters, actually.
No, that's fine. So in other words, So you do the evidence leaders or independently. So the only people that you are not prepared to do a statement with as the public protector's team?
Certainly. Good. Precisely because of the kind of questions that had been asked, It didn't seem to me that I am a witness to assist with providing evidence that could assist your client to explain herself to Parliament. The questions that I was sent in the very first letter were accusing me of certain things. And how are you going to have your statement prepared by somebody who already appears like they're trying to throw you under the bus?
Uh-huh.
Why would you do that?
All right. So, the just a minute. So, these are the issues that we had wanted you to assist us with.
Yes.
Firstly, it was the two witnesses who had accused you of ill treatment, and we wanted to give you an opportunity either to explain that away or to put it in its context and so on. Do you think that's putting you under the bus?
Absolutely. This is not an inquiry into my conduct. To write to me about two witnesses, at that stage, I didn't even know who were they. Your letters, you simply said something about Mr. Mkweban, Mr. Siyabi. I didn't even know at that stage who that person is, because, sir, I have not been a public protector for almost 6 years.
Okay. All right.
So,
and,
to say to me, I should randomly answer to those questions. In fact, can you read on the record all of the questions that you asked me to answer in the first letter, and all of the questions that you asked me to answer in the second one?
Yes. No, I'm not going to read the first one, because that was overtaken by events. But the second ones, which we responded to you at your invitation, we started with the two issues that I've just mentioned now. Your alleged role in the ill treatment of Mr. Nyatela by the Office of the Public Protector. The second one was the alleged role in the ill treatment of Mr. Siyabi by the Office of Public Protector. We've already covered that. The third one was relevant human resource issues and policies regarding security clearance issue. And you regarded that as well as putting you under the bus.
Certainly, sir. You say you were asking me to respond to allegations against me. This inquiry is about allegations against Ms. Mkwebane, not against me.
Yes. Just hold on, Honorable Maute. Please conclude, Advocate Madonsela, and then I'll go to Honorable Maute, come back to Advocate Mpofu.
Yes. Firstly, at that stage, I didn't know who Mr. Siyabi was.
No, I'm not there. I'm talking about 7.3 now, ma'am. Relevant human resource issues and policies. You've already answered the Siyabi Nyatela issue. I'm saying relevant human resource issues and policies regarding the security clearance issue. Did you regard that as putting you under the bus or not?
I regarded that as irrelevant. Let's use the language that I used in my letters. I would say, what is the allegation against who, and what's the relevance to this inquiry? Please, on the record, say exactly what I said to you.
Okay, thank you. Just pause, Advocate Mpofu. Honorable Maute.
Yeah, no, thank you, Chair. I didn't want to interrupt as well. My apologies, but I need to raise this with you, Chair. I'd like to call Thembi Nkosi as well. He's not picking up. I guess it's because he's operating there. The president of the EFF, Honorable Julius Malema, has been trying to log on since 10 o'clock. He's been parked somewhere on the passage. Can he be allowed to enter the meeting, please?
Thank you, Honorable Maute. Please attend to that matter. If there's a member in the waiting room, do we have a member in the waiting room? Okay, they say there's nobody yet, but I'll ask them to watch that space to attend to that. Thank you for that, Honorable Maute. Over to you, Advocate Mpofu.
Thank you. Madam, let's go back to what I said. If you please listen to the question and then answer that question, it will get us very far. These are your words. You said that the things that were asked were putting you under the bus. So I'm simply using your words. I'm saying whether asking you to assist the committee in relation to relevant human resource issues and policies regarding the security clearance issue, if you regarded that as putting you under the bus, yes or no?
No, I didn't regard it as putting me under the bus, and neither did I say that in my response to your lawyers, to which I still don't have a response back.
All right.
Thank you. Just a pause. Honorable Maute, I guess that's an old hand. Please remove it so that I can see when it is a new hand.
Yeah, it must have been an old hand, Chair, but still, Honorable Malema is still on the waiting list there. Can they please allow him in? He's got the correct link. He's got the correct link.
Thanks. They are looking for him. Maybe the issue will be the correct link, because in the waiting room, he's not there. So forward him the correct link that you used to enter as well, because that will be the correct one. But in the waiting room, he's not there yet. He's on his way. But there's a problem of a link, I'm sure.
Thank you. Okay, good. So that one is not putting you under the bus. Then the next one was administrative obstacles such as budgetary constraints. You regard that as, I'm sure you don't regard that as putting you under the bus.
The response I put there was, what's the relevance?
Yes, just answer the question, ma'am. I'm sure you don't regard the issue of administrative obstacles such as budgetary constraints as putting you under the bus.
Mr. Advocate Mpofu, I use the under the bus quip as an add-on. Are we going to latch on to a footnote? Surely you didn't come to this event prepared to latch on to a footnote. Can we deal with what we came for?
Can you please answer the question, Advocate Matansel? Or do you want me to ask it for the third time?
Well, okay. I don't know. Because the questions were vague, I had no idea whether the intention was to put me under the bus or not.
Oh, I see. So now you didn't know whether for the intention. I thought you said that was the intention. Okay, that's fine. And then the next one.
On the record, it would say differently.
All right. And then the next one we said we'd ask you on governance issues and audit outcomes. Do you regard that as putting you under the bus?
I regard it as irrelevant.
But not putting you under the bus?
I'm not sure, depending on what was intended with it. Anything that was vague was potentially trying to, but not putting me under the bus, trying to.
I see. Then the next one was the management of backlogs and other performance challenges. Under the bus?
I don't know.
Don't know. The next one was scathing remarks made by the courts in respect of some of the reports issued during your term. Under the bus?
Irrelevant, sir.
Okay, but not under the bus. The next one was the impact of especially the EFF versus Speaker, the Gantler's judgment on the frequency of court challenges and the spend on legal fees, as well as clarity on the question of which version of the executive ethics code you applied in respect of the Gantler investigation and others. Under the bus?
Irrelevant. When you are done, I am going to ask for permission to read the letter to this committee.
All right. No, that's fine.
Playing games.
No, the letter is before the committee.
Yes, but I would like to read it for everyone who's listening so that the auditory...
Oh, man. You are here to answer questions. I'm saying I've just read you the 8 issues which we gave to you at your invitation, and none of them seem to be putting you under the bus, or you don't know whether they put you under the bus. That's fine. Let's leave it at that. And let's go to your statements now. The affidavits, or so-called, okay, let me put it this way. And this is the context I wanted to put to the chair before. The reason, madam, that we offered to assist you with a statement, as we do with all witnesses, and as evidence leaders do with other witnesses, is because we are, as you know, trained to do this. We do it almost day in, day out. And quite frankly, whether you were going to do it with the evidence leaders or us, it wouldn't make much difference, except that it would simply conform with the requirements of the law and the requirements of this committee. So let me just make it clear.
Do you have a response to that?
No. Okay, let me contextualize. Yes, you'll have your response, but let me contextualize what I'm saying. Your first issue was that the reason why you rejected our assistance was because there were things that put you under the bus, which turned out not to put you under the bus. I'm now telling you the reason for offering you assistance was not to put you under the bus, but simply for you to be assisted as somebody who might not be conversant with the practice of law and how these affidavits should or should not be done. That's all. That's really why we assist all witnesses. And
can I get a response?
I'll show you just now that you actually needed the assistance. Yes. Yes, you may.
Can I just firstly clarify the under the bus? I said the questions that were putting me as an accused person were trying to put me under the bus. I have not suggested that everything that was in those questions was trying to put me under the bus. I said in my opening statement here with you listening that my objection to those questions was they were vague and their relevance was questionable. So let's just put the record straight. And secondly, regarding the affidavit was the very first affidavit was looked into by a commission of oath who is a qualified attorney, just like you. And in any event, being a qualified person who does all of those things every day does not necessarily mean you're the only authority who can do those things.
I see. So that relates to the first statement, correct?
The first statement, which just had typos.
No, but I thought that there's one statement. So how can you have a first statement?
There's only one statement, Advocate Mpofu. Are we trying to play with words here, sir? Again, every minute is wasting taxpayers' money.
All right.
It is.
Yes. No, that's fine, ma'am. We'll try and save the taxpayers' money the first important thing, you'd accept at least that it's important for this committee to understand whether or not there's an affidavit before it, so that if there is, then we go through it. But if there isn't, then the law must take its course.
Well, that is important, but I would have thought for me, just from a commission of inquiry type of investigation, that's a point in limine that should have been resolved last week. The chairperson announced on the 2nd of March, exactly a week from now, that the affidavit that was going to be used today was the affidavit that I sent as corrected on the 28th of March, which was the very same affidavit that was sent on the 25th of March, but corrected for typos and signed by a different commissioner of oath who has a business in Joburg but lives here in Somerset West.
All right. I think you are missing the point. Maybe let me assist you. There is no affidavit by you, but we'll come to that now. I'm saying that, do you know that you are, all right, let's start with the first affidavit, as you call it. It's dated the 23rd, and then there's a correction, it's changed to the 25th. Remember that?
Advocate himself, there is one affidavit. It was sent on the 25th, and you know yourself that things can be corrected and annotated on the side where there are corrections. And that affidavit was replaced by one that was sent on the 28th. You didn't object to that affidavit. You had a whole week to say that's not an affidavit. To come now and decide that you're going to spend taxpayers' money arguing about whether the document on the of the 28th is an affidavit or not is shocking, to say the least. But anyway, no. Well, it's the past protector that's saying it's not me, so maybe I shouldn't be dealing with that.
Yeah, maybe not, ma'am. But
as a taxpayer, it worries me.
Yeah, no, that's fine. As a taxpayer, it also worries me when it looks like there's a crime that is committed. Yeah. But do you know, maybe let's do it like, do you know that you may not correct an affidavit after it has been attested? Chairperson?
Sorry, what's that?
What do you mean, what's that? Don't speak like you are in a crawl. What
no,
do you mean?
You have not raised your hand.
You are in a meeting here. Don't say, what's that?
You
what's
have that? Not what raised you your hand, Honorable Malema.
I'm raising my hand. I'm raising
you
my
raise
hand.
It.
But
you
I'm raising my hand now.
Hand.
I'm raising it.
But you don't raise it like that. You know how to raise it.
How
hand.
Do I raise it?
You know how you got in here. You use the same tools to raise a hand.
Yeah,
Malema.
But I don't know how to raise a hand here. I'm trying to get your attention.
Then if you can't,
and then you can't start by
hand.
Saying what that, instead of recognizing me properly, don't say what
Honorable
that.
Malema.
Why do you say what that? Don't
Honorable
talk
Malema.
To me like you are talking to a garden boy, when I'm at.
I am speaking to you now. If you can't raise a hand, you call a point of order, I give you attention. You don't just get into a conversation.
I'm
it's
trying to get
it,
your attention, Jay. I'm trying to get your attention.
I'm now recognizing you.
Please speak to the witness not to interrupt Advocate Mpofu, because it doesn't come across as being dignified, and it's irritating to say the least. Let her give her a chance, because watching from here, when she just budges and interrupts the way she wants with the advocate, it doesn't look like that requires decorum of this proceedings. Please.
Well, thank you, Honorable Malema, and that's not a point of order, but I hear what you're raising, which we attended to earlier before you joined, about the interactions and the each waiting for the other, but also speaking through the chair. I attended to that, and I'm going to be watching that space. Thank you. Over to you, Advocate Mpofu.
When you say each... waiting for the other, are you suggesting that I interrupted her?
No, I'm not.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, sir. Madam, Professor?
Yes, sir.
Yes. I was just asking you whether you know or you don't know that an affidavit cannot be changed after it has been attested.
I stand to be corrected, sir. My understanding is that you can correct it, provided it's a proper procedure. That's why the affidavit of the 28th was attested to by a commissioner of oath.
Yes.
It wasn't just changes randomly on the street.
Well, but the second one, where you changed by putting hand changes, seems like it was just changed in the street, and it was changed after the public, or rather after the commissioner had signed it. Let me demonstrate that to you, ma'am. Can you put up the first affidavit? That's 31.6.2. Right, just go to paragraph 5. Right. 5, yeah. Okay, you see a paragraph 5 that it says the contents and intended appearance are in response to the letter of the chairperson of the committee, Honorable Q.R. Kyanji, MP, dated 1st February 2023. You see that?
Yes,
sir. All right. Now, that version was then signed by the Commissioner of Oaths on the 25th of February, correct?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Now, after that, you then went to change that date to the 21st, correct?
Yes.
Do you know that that is illegal? You cannot do that. Once it has been signed by the Commissioner of Oaths, you can then change the date on your own in the street, as you call it. Do you know that?
Can I explain that that's not what I did? Is it okay if I explain, sir?
No, firstly, just answer my question, ma'am. Then you can explain. Do you know that?
You know that I do.
Not done. It's illegal.
Yes,
okay,
I do.
Fine. Then you can explain.
Yes. I did not change the original affidavit by hand. I took a copy of it and I made the changes. You must look at the email that was sent on the 1st of March to everyone. The email explained properly that what we are doing is we're not replacing the affidavit of the 25th with the handwritten. We replaced it with the electronic version. And that electronic version was signed by Commissioner of Oath. In my wisdom, which seemingly now seems to be tepitude instead of rectitude, I wanted to make it easier for the committee, because it was now short notice, to see what's the difference between the affidavit signed by a Commissioner of Oath on the 28th and the affidavit signed by a Commissioner of Oath on the 25th. So the handwritten version was just ease of reference, and the email says so. I'm certain that the Secretariat can produce the email that was indicated.
Okay. Let me assist you. If you know that it's illegal to change an affidavit by hand after it has been attested to, then can you go to the second affidavit, FERPO, 31.6.1. Right. So, okay, at paragraph 5, you did exactly what you say you know is illegal, which is to change the affidavit by hand after it has been attested to, and then you put your initials next to that paragraph, correct?
I have explained that this was to just show the committee where the changes are in the proper affidavit. I never proffered this as the new affidavit. I proffered the affidavit of the 28th as the new affidavit, which is the affidavit that has since been accepted by this committee.
Yeah, wrongly. That's what I'm getting to, but we'll, don't worry, we'll get there. We'll get there. I'm simply saying here, just on what is on the screen now, is it correct that you did what you say you know is illegal, namely to change the 1st to the 21st, and then you put your initials next to that?
Well, yes, I didn't change. This was a copy of the affidavit.
I'll take it. You don't want to answer the question. That's fine. You did the same thing at on page 2, Tepo, where you again by hand changed the affidavit and put your initials next to it illegally. Correct?
I will admit that all of the changes that are now in this affidavit and in the one that is supposed to be the basis of the discussions today were changes that I've made, which are typographical in nature. If you want to make them illegal, say, so be it. But if I knew, this is where I say, points in limine should have been discussed, because you are now accusing me of criminality. Chairperson, I am now a criminally accused person. I asked for legal representation. I was not granted. And when you wrote to me, Chairperson, you said you don't need legal representation because you're not an accused person in this process. You are in this process to assist us in an investigation against Advocate Mukhwebane. So we dealt with this issue 1 week ago. These matters were not raised. If Advocate Mpofu wanted to raise these issues, he shouldn't be ambushing me right now. He should have raised them last week, and I should have gone for legal representation. He was not prepared to proceed with my affidavit for short notice, but he thinks it's okay to ambush me with issues of legality right now without having even just been sent a written notice of it. Forget about 7 days notice. So
yes, you remember me last week saying that we will have to raise issues for this committee regarding this statement, which may be referred to the police.
Well, I don't remember you saying that, but if you did say so, I'm still saying it's a point in limine that should have been discussed last week. I was
waiting. But nothing was... Oh, sorry, ma'am. Sorry.
You're speaking over me.
I'm sorry. Nothing was discussed last week.
But you're speaking over me.
Just allow her to continue. Conclude, Advocate Mpofu. Please go ahead, Madonsela.
Right. This meeting today was convened by agreement. On the record, the chairperson, on the record, you said the statement that was going to be discussed is the statement of the 28th, or the corrected version of the 28th. And this was after Advocate Abraham had said that that's the statement that I'm prepared to go with. If Advocate Mpofu wanted to put me on trial for how the changes happened between the statements happened, he should have indicated last week Monday that he wants me criminally charged for that, in which case it changes the complexity of this event today.
No,
I should have then had a lawyer to come and represent me because I'm now being accused of criminality.
No,
he insisted last week that he needs me as a witness on those matters.
Okay.
When he was saying why he needed me, he didn't say he needs me to answer for this statement. I remember when you had ruled, Chairperson, this is the end of the letter.
Thank you, Advocate Madonvela. Yeah. I think you have canvassed and ventilated the issues quite firmly. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Advocate Mpofu, I just want to go to a break. So if there's something you want to raise quickly before that.
Yes, just to round off this statement. Okay, ma'am, I've not accused you of criminality yet. I'm simply saying that at least I thought we were together. You agreed that to change a statement that has been attested to after the Commissioner of Oaths is illegal. We agreed on that, and you are right. Now, I'm simply demonstrating that you did exactly that which you and I have agreed is illegal. That's all, really. And maybe just because there's going to be a break, let me short circuit this. At paragraph 5, paragraph 6, paragraph 7.3, Tepo, maybe you can just run those so that for the witness to see. Paragraph 8.3 twice and paragraph 9.6. So it's 5 places you did that which you have admitted is illegal by changing the statement by hand and putting your signature next to it. At that point, that's the only point I want to make. Then we'll move to the third statement. Are you following?
May I just respond to that, Advocate Mpofu? Again, I've canvassed the issue of what you're doing, even by your standards, may be quite low.
Uh-huh.
If you intended to accuse me of illegality or criminality, you had the time last week to say today will not be about the content, it will not be about merits, it will be about accusing me of criminality, illegality. You didn't do that. And I disagree with you that I deny that I did anything illegal.
Okay.
All I admit to is I indicated where the changes in the electronic statement are. Last week, just my last word on this, last week when you had an opportunity to indicate why you want me today, on this matter, the only thing that you raised as an issue about this statement was the fact that the stamp of the Commissioner of Oaths of the statement of the 28th was in Joburg, whereas we claimed that this happened in Stellenbosch.
Okay, ma'am.
The evidence leader read the law to indicate that it's okay to have a business stamp for a different place, but if it can be confirmed that the statement has been done where it claims to have been done. So that was all that you raised. This incremental approach is quite shocking.
Okay, ma'am. All right. I'm sorry to shock you. But all I'm saying is we have to establish whether there is indeed an affidavit before this court. If all you are doing was to indicate, for example,
the court.
The committee.
Yes.
Well, if you were to indicate, if you merely wanted to indicate that the first should be the 21st, then why did you put your initials next to that? Because
I wanted the committee to see where the changes were.
For the committee.
Yes, the statement was being sent to the evidence leaders, and it was literally around 10 a.m. when the event was starting. And it was important for whoever. I'm sending the electronic statement. You remember you raised the hullabaloo at that stage about the fact that you've been sent a 9-page statement. It turned out that it was 8 pages, and one of the pages was repeated. So the statements were sent simultaneously to make sure that you could see from the handwritten version that this is where the changes are in the signed statement. It was sent by one email. It wasn't sent as two separate emails.
That's fine. Okay, well, I'm going to demonstrate, not now. The reason I'm asking you these questions, ma'am, is that you are here. So it's important for you to answer for yourself. Otherwise, if I raise them in argument when you are not here, that would be unfair. Let's just round off that issue by saying that I will demonstrate that what you've just said is completely untruthful. If you are merely indicating the changes, then you didn't have signed against them. And some of them, have, even the Commissioner of Oaths has signed against those changes, which, by the way, is the correct thing to do. But it's only you who has signed them, that is completely illegal. I think let's leave it there. Either you know that or you don't. That's I can't help it. But we'll then move to the next.
Can I respond to that? I deny what you're saying, and I think it's really low.
Thank you, Advocate Madonsela. Honorable Sukas, we're almost to a break, but let me hear you out.
Yes, Chair. I would like for Advocate Mpofu to please tell the committee what is the relevance of this line of question. Advocate Tuli Madonsela came here to answer or to speak evidence relating to two cases. We've now spent almost half a day on this. Not half a day, but certainly a significant amount of hours. What is the relevance to that? Secondly, Advocate Madonsela is not here for oversight. She is not. And none of what has now been discussed or been questioned has to do with the aim of this, with this inquiry.
Thank you, Honorable Sukas. Honorable Malema.
Advocate Mpofu is well within his right and is correct to ask the question that he is asking, because we can't have defective papers before us, or to a particular extent even be told lies. And then we say it is not what Advocate Madonsela is here for. Advocate Madonsela's credibility and whatever he has put in the affidavit or the letter, because we are still not even sure if these are still going to be referred to as affidavits, have to be questioned so that at the point of deliberations, we don't get shocked. And Advocate Mpofu has made that point, that I'm raising these points because during deliberations, I don't want to be told that I was unfair to you. We should all be worried that a committee like ours, even when people are not here as accused, they can come and lie here. Then it's a waste of time. No one must come and lie here. And if there is anything that suggests there is a lie, it must be exposed. If it's a correction, why does it need signatures of two people? Why do you need a signature of Commissioner of Oath to show that no, I was just making a correction of a typo? Because that is not the document you are going to use. The document you are going to use is the one that I've given you with those typos. This one I'm just correcting for ease of reference. But you use the Commission of Oath to even attach a signature. To me, it's clear you are making amendments to the original document, and as they say, it's illegal. But that point will come, and it can only come if it has been exposed through this line of question.
Thank you. I will recognize you, Advocate Madonsela. Thank you, Honorable Malema, because I'm going to try and make a summary and make a ruling on this issue. Advocate Mpofu?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Chair, in fairness to the witness, I think the point has been made now repeatedly that she needs to be given an opportunity to respond to this. But the principal point I was making, Chair, is why we offered to assist her, so that these illegalities would not have occurred, because we know that she's not a practicing lawyer. And the only point I want to make before we take the break, Advocate Matanzela, is this. Even on your version that these were just corrections, that is completely false, because on 5, 1, 2, 3, on 3 occasions, both you and the Commissioner of Oaths have signed on these so-called changes after the commissioning, which would amount to an illegality on both your parts. And then on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 occasions, you only signed on your own. So just that inconsistency. Either you were going to sign on your own or sign with the Commissioner of Oaths. But both of those things cannot be correct. The correct one, as you should know, is the one where you both signed. So where you've just signed on your own is incorrect, is illegal on your part. Where the Commissioner of Oaths has signed on his part after you have already commissioned, then that's illegality on his part or her part. That's really the gist of this. And it's not a small matter. This is Parliament. It is the Parliament that passed the law that defines what an affidavit is. So if this Parliament was just playing games when it passed that law, then they will tell us. But I'm sure they were passing that law for a reason, so that people don't come and misrepresent the truth. And so that is the importance of this exercise. And finally, sorry, Chair, finally, the issue is really as to whether there is or there isn't an affidavit before this committee. But we can run off. I hope you understand those. Do you?
I disagree. Can I explain and assist you this time?
I don't need your assistance.
Even though I'm not being paid to assist you.
No, I don't need your assistance, nor your snide remarks, ma'am. Please,
you
have to ask questions, not to be sarcastic.
Okay.
Okay, I know the chair is not stopping you from all that. You've been insulting me and be sarcastic.
Don't speak over me.
No, Just pause, Advocate Matonzela. Can you conclude, Advocate?
Okay. No, Miss Advocate Matonzela, I'm saying to you, and I'm saying it as kindly as I can master, despite all your insults to me this morning, I'm saying that now you're speaking over me. All right, let me start again. Fine, apology accepted. I'm saying, ma'am, that I'm making 3 points here, and either you understand them or you don't. One is that your version that these were merely indicative changes is belied by the fact that you signed against it. Secondly, the fact that on some parts, only you signed for it, which is wrong, and then other parts, you and the Commissioner of Oaths signed against it, shows illegality on both your parts. And thirdly, I'm saying it's important for this committee to know, because our directives say so, that witnesses should make an affidavit. Witnesses are free not to make an affidavit, but once they purport to make an affidavit, it has to be an affidavit. Do you understand that or not? Well, I'm not saying you agree with it, but do you understand that?
I don't understand your logic, sir.
Okay, well, that's fine. Then maybe you can go and let's take a tea break. Maybe
I'm the chair. Sorry. Thank you, Advocate Both.
I mean, Chair. So I'm not taking
you
over your meeting. I'm
thank
just
you.
Saying
thank you. Thank you, Advocate Both.
Yes.
Over to you, Advocate Matonzela.
Thank you, sir. What I wanted to assist Advocate Mpofu with are 2 points. There's 1 document on the table in 3 articulations. It's a 4-page affidavit. It was signed before an attorney who is the director of the law firm where he is. On the 25th. On each page of that affidavit, both he and I initialed it, and it was sent to the committee. So now Advocate Bofi has not only insulted me and criminalized me, he has now criminalized a fellow member of the bar by simply failing to read documents that he's paid to read. That affidavit of the 25th is in the document pack, I hope. And in any event, it was sent to the attorneys that are instructing Advocate Mbosi. The signature of the attorney who assisted me is at the end on page 4, and he's initialized all of the pages. So to fabricate lies here and suggest that those signatures only appeared during the corrections is shocking, to say the least. And again, this could have been corrected if we had had a pre-trial kind of hearing to clarify these things instead of trying here to play games. I've indicated that there are three articulations of one document. Okay, I have not proffered to this committee the version that Advocate Mpofu is latching onto as the document on the record. The document that I've offered to the committee was the version that is electronic, where the changes are made and therefore a new commissioner of oath signed that document, precisely because we realized that if you made changes on the previous document, it would be a problem, legally speaking. Hence, a new commissioner of oath signed the document that I came to this committee today understanding with the basis of our discussion. But 2 hours later, we are discussing things that should be discussed at a pre-trial session, and certainly between learned friends and being the evidence leaders and the lawyers before we come to these events.
Thank you, Madonsela. I want to make a ruling before we go for tea, but I see the hand of Advocate Mayosi. Nobody wants tea today, but I'll have to make that ruling before tea. We've been at it for some time now. Sure. Advocate Mayosi?
No, Chair, I'll retract. You can proceed.
Okay.
Chair, please bear with me. I know you want to go to lunch.
I want to
make a break, but can I just make a response just by one point? Advocate Madonsela, yes, ma'am. Okay. What you have just said is completely untrue, and I'll demonstrate it to you, ma'am. You said that where the public protector,
it can't be untrue.
All right. You said that, you've just said now in your last answer that in the versions that you rendered to the committee, all the pages were signed by you and the Commissioner of Oath, correct?
May I answer, sir? In the,
yes,
the first
you may.
That's version why I asked. Of this affidavit, the first version of this affidavit being the one sent on the 25th was signed by the Commissioner of Oath. He never ever signed anything else after that.
No, that's not true. Let's go to that.
No, thank you.
Okay, let me just summarize then.
I want you to pause there now.
Can I summarize this? Okay. Can either confirm or not. Okay. This is the truth, madam. On the first version, you are right, on page one, you and the commissioner signed. On page two, at 7.4, you and the commissioner signed. Page three, 8.3, you and the commissioner signed. Yes. But on page four or five, 9.6, the commissioner did not sign. In other words, you are the only person who signed that. That's where it talks about Gogo Dlamini and all that. Do you admit that, or do you want to dispute it so that we can put it up after the break?
I dispute it. The document only
okay.
has four pages.
Good.
There's
Very
no
good.
Document with five pages.
Okay, that's fine. So at 9.6, your version is that both you and the commissioner signed.
The commissioner was just signing each page, the commissioner of oaths. He wasn't signing changes except the one where he had made a mistake on the date.
No, that's also not true. He signed four times, but I'm saying...
He signed four times, of course, because he initialized each page.
Yes. Okay,
he
ma'am. Look, okay, let me just tell you, yeah, you've just made it worse. I think that the sum total, which I will argue at the end, is that none of your versions hold water or consistently appear through the statement, and none of the statements therefore qualify to be called an affidavit. And to the extent that either you or the Commissioner of Oaths breached the act, then those matters. Are you a member of the Legal Practice Council?
Advocate Mpofu.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm going to stop you
That's
now.
That's irrelevant.
I thought you were saying you're summarizing.
Firstly, number one.
Advocate Madonsela.
No,
Advocate Madonsela, please pause. I want you to pause as well. We're now going to take a tea for 15 minutes. Back after 15 minutes, and I will make a ruling. Thank you, so that we'll proceed.
But, Chair, I'm still talking. No, Chair, I want to move to something else when we come back. But if you want us to come back to this.
We'll come back after 15 minutes after tea break.
All right. Thank you, Chair.
Recording stopped.
Welcome back, colleagues, from the tea break. I had promised that we're going to, from the chair, make a ruling so that we proceed with our work. But before that, so that I'm fair, Advocate Mpofu did ask for the last opportunity. But before I go to you, I'm going to recognize Advocate Mayosi.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Chair, I don't want to interrupt Advocate Mpofu. I don't know how far he is with concluding on this issue, but I thought that it might assist the committee if he could perhaps indicate whether there is a problem with Advocate Madonsela's statement dated the 28th of February, because that is the statement that is before the committee.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. Yes, that's a fair question. Yes. Well, there's a problem with all the three versions, so that would automatically include that one. But that's not the issue. I mean, you can't tell us that that is the only issue for the committee. The committee has been presented with illegally signed statements against the, at least that's one thing that the witness and I agree on. But Chair, for the sake of progress, I'm actually going to move to that statement.
Yeah, I'm going to allow you to move to that
okay.
statement, but I think there's a
yes.
Thank you.
Just as a follow-up, Advocate Mpofu, could you just identify what the issue is then with the statement of the 28th one, and the evidence of the witness when you were asking her questions was that she didn't present the changed version as a statement before this committee. So there's a statement of the 25th, which, as I take it from her evidence, is replaced by the statement of the 28th of February before this committee.
Okay. Well, Chair, if Advocate Mayus wants to take the stand, I can indicate to her, but I thought it's better if I indicate it through the witness who's the author of the statement. But maybe if she had anything to do with this. Maybe let me assist her for the sake of progress, Chair. On the first statement, the last question I asked, I indicated what the problem is. I don't know if you were following Ms. Mayose, which is that on the last page at 9.6, only the witness signed and not the commissioner. Are we together on that one? Okay, good. So even if you wish away the second statement, which where she makes handwritten changes and sometimes she signs alone, sometimes signs with the commissioner of oaths, that alone is a problem because there can only be one way of doing it. Though not both of those things can be correct. But I say, for sake of progress, Chair, if I can move to the statement of the 28th.
Yes, and then both boys, my ruling was going to go to that point.
Okay.
So are you now moving into that?
I am, Chair.
Okay.
Yes.
Let me allow you.
Thank you, Chair. Ma'am, Advocate Matanzela, the professor. Is the witness still with us, Chair?
Yes, she's with us.
Right.
Oh, good. Yes. Now, I want to show you that even the statement that you direct us to, which is the quote-unquote affidavit of the 28th of February 2023, because I see your version and that of Advocate Mayose is that we must forget about any illegality that might have taken place in respect of the first two statements, and because it's the statement of the 28th that is before this committee, right? Professor? I think
there was
lost...
no illegality. Firstly,
yeah.
You made a mistake, sir, by saying that the Commissioner of Oaths signed the corrections, which means you did not look at the original affidavit, because you would have seen that anything that is signed by the Commissioner of Oaths is symmetrical between the statement of the 25th and the hand corrected statement. So it would be nice if you were to withdraw that accusation of a fellow member of the legal profession by simply failing to look at the two statements together.
Okay, now you're bringing us back. Sorry, Chair, I was trying to avoid this. Can you then go to the statement bundle H, item 31.6? I'll just deal with the front page so as to save time. Just the front page. Move up from paragraph 4. Yeah, move up. Okay. Chip, are you able to remove those pictures of me and the professor?
Just minimize.
Or minimize, because we want to see the margins where the signatures are. Whoever. IT.
Just hide the pictures for now. Or minimize.
On that negative.
Take away the picture. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
You can see them now.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay.
You see there that the signature is just your signature. So I think that's the wrong statement anyway. That's the one of the 28th. I want the one of the 25th, Serpo. It's 486, page 486. Yeah, go down. I mean up or whatever. Further down. Yeah. That's it. Can you see that picture, Professor?
Yes.
Right. At the bottom, both you and the commission are signed, correct?
Yes. As you will see in the original statement, it's exactly symmetrical.
No, just answer the question. At the bottom, both you and the
Yes, as in the original statement, it is symmetrical.
No, ma'am. Please just answer the question. At the there are three, go further down. At the, I want all three to show at the same time, like that. There's one, two, three. The bottom one is signed by you and the commissioner, correct?
Yes, sir. As exactly as it's the same in the statement of the 25th.
And then the...
Just play the 25th one, you'll see the symmetry.
That is the statement of the 25th, ma'am. I'm saying at the bottom, just answer the question. Don't worry about anything else. If I want something else, I'll ask you a question. At the bottom of the three signatures is you and the commissioner. Yes, no?
Yes, it is.
Yes. And at the top two signatures is just you. Yes, no?
This is where I was all by myself indicating the corrections. Yes, it is me, because the Commission of Oath was not there. He signed all of the statements on the same day.
Good, thank you. So you signed there in the absence of the Commission of Oath, correct? That's what
you're
saying.
Yes, because there, that statement is not what is presented to this committee. And I think Advocate Mayosi just indicated to you that the statement presented to this committee is the electronic version, which is signed by a Commissioner of Oath.
Okay. Then at least it's clear that on that page that we see there's inconsistency. On the one signature, both of you signed, and on the other two, only you signed. That's fine. Let's go quickly to the statement that you seem to be so keen to go to, of the 28th. Can you put that up, Tsepo? That's the item 31.6. Go towards paragraph 5. Yes, only you signed there, correct?
Yes, it is me only.
Yes. And so what you said before T is untrue, that you and the commissioner signed on the final statement, correct?
No, this is awful. Are you trying to deliberately misunderstand me? Can I correct you if you try to...
Yes, ma'am. Yes, yes.
The statement of the 25th, which your team and the evidence leaders have, has my signature and the signature of the Commissioner of Oath.
At certain parts, we've established that.
On every page. That statement, don't play between the two statements. Play with the statement of the 25th separately, which, remember, your team received it and the committee received it through the evidence leaders separately. It was a four-page document all by itself. It is signed by the two of us on every page.
That's a lie.
That's why I was saying you should have read the two documents and not confused them.
Okay, let's go to the statement of the 28th, ma'am. Let's not confuse anything.
Yes.
The one of the 28th is the one that you own. Do you agree that on what everyone can see now on the screen, only you signed?
Yes, sir. On the statement of the 28th, all pages were signed by myself.
Yes. And there's no signature of the Commissioner of Oaths on that page, either for the change or for for anything. There's just no signature of the Commissioner of Oath. You accept that?
Yes, because it was now a new Commissioner of Oath attesting to the entirety of the statement and saying that as far as he's concerned, I have sworn before him that the statement in its entirety is a four-page statement is
Okay. Have the you heard of the rule?
Nothing but the truth.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, ma'am. I'm sorry to speak over you. Do you know or are you familiar with the rule that the Commissioner of Oaths must sign every page?
No, I am not familiar with that rule. If I were familiar, if you had asked me last week on Friday, he is here in Somerset West. I would have taken it to him to make sure that he signs all pages.
No,
just a pause. I've got a hand, Advocate Mayosi.
Thank you, Chair. If Advocate Wofford could indicate which law makes it a requirement for the Commissioner of Oaths to signal to initial every page.
All right. I'll give you the name of the act. The reason, let me show you how that you accept that the Commissioners of Oaths are ruled by the same rules. Madam.
I accept it, sir. I am just saying that you'd rather waste 3 hours when you could have raised this thing last week. There was an issue about the statement. Is it the right statement? Is it the wrong statement? And the chair ruled, with me having said there's nothing wrong with the statement, he ruled that this will be the statement. Had you said then you have a new objection to the one you heard, because on that day, the only objection you raised, sir, was that the Commissioner of Oaths signed with the stamp in Joburg, whereas he was here in Stellenbosch. Had you raised that, say, we would have not wasted taxpayers' money in 4 hours. I would have called him to come to my house or gone to his house to fix that and have a new statement for you.
Okay. No, it's
in
not
7 days.
No, ma'am. It's not fixable. You see, that's the whole point. That's the whole point of swearing to God and saying, I swear that the contents of this declaration are true, so help me God. Once that is done, you cannot alter that which you have sworn to God is the statement. Maybe you don't understand that part. But we will get the Commissioner of Oaths to give us an affidavit on all the contentious issues. But for now, I'm simply asking you, because you are the only one who's here, that let's go to...
just before Honorable Maneli.
No, thank you, Chair. I just want to ask again, just for clarity, mm-hmm. on your side so that I know where we are. Chair, first, we were not supposed to convene on this witness as per the first ruling. But on argument put on the table, we're convinced to review. You're convinced to review the position of the committee, and you made that ruling that would use this statement of the 28th as the basis for the engagement. Assuming, Chair, that at that time there was no time to look at it in the meeting. Of course, we've had other days and then maybe something else would have happened. At least I would expect that there would be communication in this regard, that you may not be happy with the statement that is before the committee on the basis of its legality. Right. But again, as we were starting now, I think one reasonably would expect that as a preliminary point, deal with whether there's question about the legal standing of this affidavit or statement that is before the committee, and that therefore the engagement you are having at this point is the motivation of the illegality of it. Because I make an assumption that if it's illegal, the advocate himself would not participate in illegality. So that at least we know what we are dealing with, whether we are in that motivation of demonstrating the illegality. Secondly, at least the last statement made now, that even if you try to fix this, it's not fixable. It's linked to the question that's not answered. And I thought, Chair, you would want the answer first to that question, on which law? I think Advocate Mayose asked that, so that at least that matter is then cleared, and we know that we are listening to a motivation that the committee in its consideration should look at this affidavit differently, because it has already made a ruling to accept it and use it as the basis of convening Monday and Tuesday. Otherwise, from a point of the committee, there was no reason to call to convene, Chair. So I'm telling at least access for a member like me who may not be in the legal space, but who really wants to participate in an inquiry of the committee, understanding that it's also not a court, and if there are other matters of criminality that needs to be pursued, there are channels to also deal with that aspect. So that's my point, Chair. As I say, I may be raising it because I'm swimming in confusion where we are. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mandeli. I kept postponing the ruling, but Advocate Mpofu, because I need to rule so that we are able to get into the contents of the statement. And you were promising that you're going to the statement, hence I pulled back. I think you said you'll answer the question of Advocate Mayose. I did not want to rush you into that. I think the member is asking that you do provide that response.
Chair, I'm not going to be...
the floor.
Oh, sorry.
Switch off your mic. Thank you. So I'm saying I'm interested to hear that, because I can't hold back any longer in terms of making a ruling and direct these proceedings to a particular point instead of us being all over the place at one point. So I'm just going to give you that last opportunity to assist us on those issues.
Okay, Chair. I said, well, we're not here a legal argument at this stage. I'll give you and Mr. Mayose, Ms. Mayose and Mr. Manelli the name. It's a long act. I'll give it to you now about commissioners of oath passed by this parliament. I'll give you the section, but I wanted to short circuit this exactly for the reasons that Mr. Manelli is raising, just to make it easy for someone who doesn't have to read the act. Chair, if you allow me, just two questions. I'll give you now, my team will get to that long title. Let's go to the statement of the 25th paper. This is going to be short, Chair. Yes, just go to the second page. We've already dealt with the first page. Go to 487 at the bottom. You see that for that page, you and the commissioner, both of you signed, correct?
It's impossible. I have said the statement of the 25th is signed by me and the commissioner on all pages.
Yes.
Difficulty slighting the original without the change on it.
Okay,
because
that's
we
good.
Really are wasting time.
No, if please.
If we slighted the original without the changes, we would not have to keep...
Answer the question.
Yeah, but don't interrupt her.
But she's not answered.
Because you can put your point that the question is not answered. It doesn't give you the power to interrupt her as she's speaking. We'll come to this
point. I'm appealing to you,
much earlier on.
I'm appealing to you.
Thank
to,
you.
Please.
Chair, why are you not sitting on the same chair as the witness? Why are you not sitting on the same chair as the witness?
Honorable Malema, you've not been recognized to speak.
Yeah.
Honorable Malema, you've not been recognized to speak.
Chairperson.
That's
you're the, abusing me.
Let
now.
Me complete conclude this.
Okay.
I've addressed this matter early on, that you are not, there must be no interruptions. And early on, it was not done by you. It can't be right now that it is done by you. Before she concludes what she's saying, you must interrupt her, and then you complain to the chair that she's not answering the question. If you want to put that to the chair, then you will put that, but it doesn't give you the right to interrupt her while she's responding.
Okay, sure.
Please conclude, Advocate Madonvel.
Yes, Chair, I'm sorry to correct you, sir. Earlier on, Advocate Mpofu did also speak over me, and I did call him on that. And if you play the record, you will find that more than once, he also spoke over me. But to the extent that I spoke over him, I do apologize, or spoke out of turn. I do apologize.
Thank you, Honorable Madonsela. Advocate Mpofu.
Thank you, Chair. You know, I'm trying to do this patiently. I'm saying, Chair, I've asked the question. The reason why we have you here, the chairperson, is to assist all of us. I've asked the question, the witness. We've now taken 6 minutes on the question whether or not at the bottom of the page that she can see on the screen, there are two signatures. Yes or no? I mean, surely that must be the easiest thing to answer. To now get this whole lecture is uncalled for, Chair. We're on time schedule. You're going to tell me at a particular point to stop. And so in the time that's available, I must get as many questions and answers to those questions as possible. I'm asking a simple question. Okay, let me do it like this, ma'am, without showing you anything, because maybe that's where the problem is. In the statement of the 25th, did the Commissioner of Oaths sign every page?
Absolutely.
Yes. And then in the statement of the 28th, did the Commissioner of Oaths not sign every page?
True.
Good. Thank you.
He did sign the last page.
Now you're allowing her to speak over me.
She had concluded. Conclude?
Yeah, the answer is yes. He didn't sign the first three pages. He signed the last page.
Great. Yeah. Now, thank you. So I'm saying, irrespective of the name of the act, which I will supply, I'm trying to simplify it as Mr. Manelli said we should, for a non-lawyer. One Commissioner of Oaths signed all the pages. The other one did not sign all the pages. Which one is correct of the two Commissioners of Oaths?
I didn't know there's a competition between the two of them.
No, ma'am.
I'm not the Commissioner of Oaths. All I know is that I submitted to this committee the statement of the 28th that is signed by a Commissioner of Oaths as the statement for consideration. And the chair ruled that that was the statement that would be the basis of these deliberations on the 1st of March. We are meeting on the 6th of March. Nobody came back to me and say, no, that statement will not be acceptable. And then you say, no, once you've said, oh, help me God, it's all gone. Well, oh, help me God, it was the truth. Don't try to imply just because the other pages were not signed on the statement of the 28th, there is a lie. I don't like the fact that you make statements at the end of things and then you jump to the next person. When you make a statement to me, let me respond to it. Thank you.
Okay, I'm moving away from this, but I just want to
Or you move away. Advocate Mayos.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, because of Advocate Mpofu's line of questioning, I have to insist that he furnish us with the law that makes this a requirement. As far as I could see, the Justices of the Peace and Commissioners of Oaths Act contains no such requirement that a commissioner has to initial every page. Neither do the regulations governing the administration of oaths of affirmation. But if there's a different law that Advocate Mpofu is aware of, it will assist us in this line of questioning as far as this affidavit is concerned.
All right. Ma'am, you, when you were in your 7-year stint as the public protector...
Before you ask, so we now know the name of the act.
Yes, no, I know it too, Chair. It was given to me.
Because we're waiting for it.
Yeah. So are you feeling better now?
Wait, I'm on the platform.
All right.
Don't stay the dialogue, please.
Okay.
You've just asked me now to be the chair. Now I'm in that chair.
All right, answer. Chair. All right, all right.
So I'm indicating that we now have that clarity.
Correct.
About that act. And there's a point that says quite clearly, and it's going back to you in terms of within that act, what section of that act is really requiring that.
Right. Okay. It's the regulations, Chair. Chairperson, I don't have the act in front of me right now. If you want me to take, I can take a break of your time and go and find it. I'm trying to save that, and you are pushing me to give you a name of an act. What difference does that make?
Now, this is what we're going to do now. You ask that, you're going to proceed to the next point. I just want to indicate this now.
Yes.
Your next point has got to be getting into the statement that brought us here for the following reasons.
Yeah.
When we met here on the 1st of March, and this has been quoted several times, we concluded in giving the directive that that statement, which was corrected and cleaned up, would be the statement that this committee was going to utilize for its own purposes.
Yeah.
In terms of it being a written evidence, okay?
Is it an affidavit?
Wait, I'm speaking. I didn't even give you to speak. Sorry. Please switch off your mic. And thereafter, as a chair of this committee, I wrote to the public protector to give a further opportunity, which is the proposal that you brought, to say, we, even though we've taken a decision to utilize that statement as part of our deliberations, we are offering you another opportunity to come today and tomorrow to interact with the witness, which you agreed. There's never been any objection about whether that statement is now objected to because it's not legal and so on. So I regard the exercise that I've been very patient to allow it happen. It's now become a peripheral issue in relation to what we're here for today and tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
I want you to come and get into interacting with the witness based on the statement that this committee adopted here, that it is going to use for now in terms of the testimony, but also for its deliberations.
Okay. Chairperson, if I may just respond to that. Firstly, you are being extremely unfair. I said to you on that day, and I've been hearing the witness saying we should have raised this on the 1st, but there were no proceedings on the 1st. There was, I never interacted with the witness. But even under those circumstances, Chair, I told you that we have problems with this statement. That's number one. Number two, I told you that the statement of the 28th arrived at 10:13 while I was talking to you. I started talking to you at 10 o'clock. So when was I going to look at that statement and see all the defects in it when it arrived while I was busy addressing you? That's the second point. The third point is that, as you know, this witness has refused to consult with us. If she had consulted with us even after that time, all this would have been resolved with her. So the only and first opportunity for us to deal with this matter is now and here. So for you to want to suppress And lastly, Chair, and very importantly, sorry, Chair, the most important thing, I've said this, I'm saying it, I think, for the fourth time now, is to establish. There's no point in saying you made a ruling on the first. In fairness to you, when you made that ruling, surely you are making it on the assumption that this is an affidavit, like all affidavits that we've seen here. And you are entitled to believe that. When it is now being pointed out to you that this is not an affidavit, you can't refer me to a statement you made when you yourself had not seen the statement because it came at 10:13. Now, so you're just bullying me for no reason.
No, let me assist you. Yeah. I'll give you back. Let me assist you. There's no bullying here.
There is.
And in fact, even on the day, we indicated that there was nothing substantial that was changed in the statement. I'm on record as having said that. And in fact, beyond that, the letter I wrote to you, which you responded yesterday, has no objection in that letter in relation to this issue.
And no, that's not true, Chair. Can we get the letter of yesterday?
No. I'm not going there.
No, that's
you will argue your point. You will argue your point if you want to argue your point.
Okay.
I'm not interested that we're going to be all over the place instead of getting to the crux of what brought us here, Advocate Mpofu.
No, Chairperson.
We've been spending a number of times without getting into why we are here.
Okay. We're here to lead the witness on an affidavit. Are we not?
Go ahead.
Yes. If we are, then it's important to establish whether there is an affidavit or not. Because, Chair, let me explain to you.
You had agreed that there is
no
statement.
It's a question of law. It's not a question of the committee.
You are not able to prove which law that says it's not a statement or affidavit.
No.
You're not able to do that.
No, no, that's about something else.
Okay, just finish it, then I'm going to
invite
members to
speak. If you want to know
quickly. Honorable members, we have to just quickly deal with this issue. I'm going to give you the last opportunity.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Chair, since you seem to be obsessed with the name of the act, it's the Justices of the Peace and Commissioners of Oaths Act, number 16 of 1963. I hope you are happy now.
It was raised.
Okay. And under that act, there are regulations, and I will give you the reference. But the witness has confirmed, and in fact, you stopped me at a point where this thing would have been done a long time ago, Chair. I was just about to ask the witness whether in her 7 years at the public protector, where she signed millions and millions of affidavits, does she know that in those affidavits, in fact, we've got some of them here, the commissioner always signed every page or not? That's all I was going to ask, and then move on. If she knows,
that's fine. That's going to be your last question, and then you get into the meat of the speech.
Yes, Chair. It will be. Thank you, Chair. Chair, okay. You know, I really feel that I don't understand why you're not interested to know whether there's an... It's not me who trusted the directives that said statements that come here must be affidavits. There's a reason for that, Chair. There are proceedings. For example, in the Judicial Service Commission, Chair, the law there used to say that if you want to complain about a judge, you can make a statement. It was changed a few years ago to say, no, that complaint must come as an affidavit. There's a reason, Chair, that there's a difference between an affidavit and a statement. So I'm saying to you...
That shouldn't be a problem. That's fine.
That's really all I was establishing. If the committee is not interested whether what is before it is indeed an affidavit, well, that's the committee's prerogative.
Thank you, Edwin. I'll come back to you to ask the last question.
Let me ask
then
that
you
question.
Get into the actual content of why we're here. But Advocate Mayosi?
Chair, I want to leave this point. Advocate Mpofu is correct. The Justices of the Peace and Commissioners of Oaths Act of 1963, but I would still really request him to show us which section in that act says that the law says what it does. The regulations governing the administration of oaths and affirmation, which were updated on 23 April 1982, I would again request him to show us where in the regulation there is this requirement that he relies upon.
Yes. I will.
Okay. I will, on
Thank you for raising that.
Chair, I will come to that, and I'll give you the, after the break, I'll give you the particular section. I'm happy now simply to ask that question that you allowed me to ask, so that we move on, and then when we come back, I don't want to waste your time. Otherwise, if you feel like giving me a break, you may do so. But I think this can be resolved by just asking that one question.
Okay,
at least
go ahead.
Point. Yeah. Advocate Madonsela.
Yes, sir.
Yes. I want to ask you whether you, in your experience as a public protector or as anything to do with the law, in the affidavits that you have signed before, whether it was in the Nkandla matter or any other matter, you ever noticed that you would be required to sign every page, and so would the Commissioner of Oaths? If you remember, just from memory, if you don't, we will demonstrate later, but do you remember anything of that sort?
No, I didn't pay attention to the fact that all of them were done the same way.
All right. Okay. No, that's fine. Then let's leave it at that. We will leave it for legal argument, at which point we will give the commission all the law regarding all the... can you give us the Commissioner of Oaths, the one from North Riding, is he available to give an affidavit? The one who did not sign every page.
He is definitely available. He lives here in Somerset West.
That's fine. That's good. Now then we will avail ourselves of that opportunity. Thank you, Chair. Now I'm going to ask you the questions. I want to make it clear at this point that what you have presented to this committee is just a you know, we have demonstrated that it's a litany of falsity, but certainly what you have presented as an affidavit is not an affidavit, and we'll leave that for legal argument. I'm sure you don't agree with that conclusion, but we'll leave it for argument, correct? I mean, when I say correct, I don't mean you agree. I mean, can we move on?
I do have a question, sir, because we haven't discussed the contents, and your conclusion to now say it's a lot of falsity, I do not understand that. My understanding is that on this committee's agenda today is the statement of the 28th, and my understanding is that last week your concern was only that it had a stem from North Riding, and today your concern has changed to the fact that it's not signed on every page. Where does the falsity come from now?
No, I'm saying, ma'am, that it is not an affidavit. Let's forget how we got there. I'm just simply saying it is not an affidavit that is combined with our laws. But I will ask you questions on it on the assumption
that
it is. The one that I just cited. Okay. All right. And let me, I'll give you the, if you want it again. Anyway, no, let's not go there. I'm going to ask you questions now on the assumption that what you said in that, I think let's rather call it a statement, not an affidavit. What you said in that document is what you want to testify on. Okay, so we're now going to go to the document. I think I'll call it a document. Yeah. All right. Now let's go to, you have correctly, if I may say so, as a lawyer, you know that saying that says context is everything.
Sorry to disturb you. It's just a hand there. Honorable Malema. Just before you proceed. Honorable Malema?
No, I was worried that the advocate Madonsela is now asking Advocate Mpofu questions, and you allow that as a chairperson. Advocate Mpofu is not there to answer questions, and you should be directing that meeting in a proper way. Please.
Thank you, Honorable Malema. Proceed, Advocate Mpofu.
Thank you, Chair. No, I wanted to just assure the committee member that I'm exercising extreme patience for reasons that will become clear. So I'm not going to respond to the insults and the slurs and the snide remarks. I think it's better. The public is there to judge on its own. Yeah. All right, Madam, I'm saying then that let's go to your statement. Let's start at 9.1. Oh, sorry, I was asking you the question. You agree that in law, context is everything, correct?
No,
you don't.
It is not everything. It's part of the considerations you make. As a lawyer, okay. You also know that it's just part of what you consider. It's not everything.
Okay. You've never heard of the often repeated statement by judges that context is everything in law? Or if you've heard of it, you differ with it, correct?
No, I haven't heard of it, but you can guide me which judgment has said that. The constitutional court judgments don't say that. They consider context as one of the considerations they make.
Yes, no, that's fine. Well, the constitutional court does say so, and every legally trained person who has come here, there have been more than 10, I've always, if they're legally trained, I first ask them that question, and it's only you who has never heard of it, but that's fine. Let me move on again, because I'm going to be asked which paragraph of which judgment that is in. And unfortunately, even I don't have all the judgments without referring to them. But let's not quibble about that. But okay, let's say you agree that context is important.
He who assess must prove. Twice you have made assertions, and when asked to prove, you said you'll prove it later. I take issue with that. You said the affidavit should have been signed every page. You signed the same law that the evidence leaders cited. And then when you were asked which regulation, you said you'll find out later.
I appreciate your interaction on that issue. I'd want you to answer the question that is asking if you agree that context is important.
Yes, sir, I had already said that. I have said that we are required, actually, by the Constitution and the law to consider context among other considerations.
Okay, thank you. I'm happy with that. So important is context that in your statement, you have three sections, and two of them deal with context. Only one deals with the content of CX and FREDA. Am I right?
Certainly, not as everything, as one of the considerations.
Ma'am, did you hear the question? Is it so that in your statement, you have part A, which is headed context, part B, which deals with the content, let's say, and part C, which deals again with context? In other words, of the three sections in your statement, two of them deal with context. Is that so or not so?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. All right. So on the basis that your statement is, let's say, 66% made up of context, then we're going to start with that context. Right. Now, I want to start at paragraph 9.1, of your statement. You said everything that is above paragraph 10 is relevant. So let's do it like that so that we stick to what you regard as relevant. You say at paragraph 9.1, I inherited a well-run institution that had been built virtually from scratch and improved step by step by my predecessors. Correct?
Yes, sir.
Right. Okay, so let's deal with that part. Yeah. When the well-run institution that you refer to, you would agree that as a corporate leader, at least I was once one, that refers to broadly to the people issues, the operational issues, and the governance issues. Those would be some of the signposts of a well-run institution, correct?
Yes.
Good. And of course, there's the output, which is the productivity. If you are producing sausages, how many sausages? If you are producing bread, how many loaves of bread, and so on. So those are the pillars of a well-run institution, correct?
Absolutely. Quantity and quality.
Yes, absolutely. Good. And in fact, very good. On all those aspects, it's quantity and quality. So the people, the HR issues, the operations, the governance, and the output, those would be measured qualitatively and quantitatively. I agree with you. All right. So would you then say, if you say you inherited a well-run institution that can be built from scratch, you also left behind a well-run institution based on those parameters that you and I have agreed on?
Yes.
All right. And now, when it comes to the people issues, you had, obviously, there's never 100% in these things, but you had the necessary skills that you needed to run the institution, correct?
Absolutely. Although I'm not sure now whether this is now about me or it was okay. Just me giving context about the institution, because you're now asking me about my skills. I'm not sure what's the relevance of that question.
No. If you listen, you'll get the relevance. I didn't ask you about your skills at all. I didn't, ma'am. I was talking about the institution. I thought you said, I inherited a well-run institution.
Well-run and having all the skills that you need are two different stories.
All right.
Interrelated, but don't have the same meaning. I think you know that.
All right. So what's the answer? Or do you not want to whether you had the necessary? Oh, I see why you were confused. When I say you had the necessary skills, I don't mean you. I mean, did you have the necessary skills base to call it a well-run institution when you left it?
I'm not sure who's confused between the two of us at times. I know you like using that sentence, but sometimes I wonder who's the confused one. But let me answer your question. We had the right skills base. And what you have put now for the public view would show you that there's a logical sequence to what I said. That it was a well-run institution, but we kept learning and growing together. In other words, it was not a perfect institution.
Yes.
And it says so in the affidavit.
Yes, I think that's the same thing as what I just said, that it's never 100%. But if you prefer to say it that way, that's fine. And okay, so let's put that one. And then in terms of governance, were you satisfied with the achievements of the institution?
The institution kept growing. I know this is irrelevant, but it's you trying to insert your attempt to measure me instead of making this about your client. But I will answer you nonetheless there, because you've been wanting this for a long time. The institution that I inherited was well run, both by two advocates of this country, one of them a judge, who built it from scratch. It was, though, an evolving institution, and when we came in, the concerns around, for example, issues of corruption ballooned because the scorpions had been discontinued. And obviously, this well-run institution had to be agile in adjusting to change, which, if you're talking about the skills base, anyone who had ever worked in the provinces had never dealt with a complex investigation unless they had worked at a national office.
Chairperson, please.
Corruption and good governance matters, or conduct failure matters, were never dealt in the provinces. And therefore, that's an institution that had to evolve and adjust to that. With regards to governance, when I arrived, the institution had gotten a disclaimer, not because my immediate predecessor was incompetent, because the CFO had died. So my first appearance in Parliament was to speak to a report where there had been a disclaimer. That's where we started to rebuild.
Okay, thank you. I was really...
Let me... Well, sorry.
Okay. Now, I was just asking a simple question, really, which doesn't require all these stories. I'm simply saying, as far as governance is concerned, were you happy or not happy with the performance of the institution that you call well-run?
When it comes to governance, I was happy. When it came to investigations, we changed the emphasis on numbers.
That would be operation.
Advocate Madonsela, you did answer in terms of governance.
Yeah.
So you don't stretch it further than that.
Yeah. In fact, yes, I'm not going to go to operations because I think then we'll spend another 15 minutes. All right. And it is indeed so that until recently, the institution never received a clean audit, correct?
I knew you were getting there, and because that's one of the irrelevant questions you had asked me. Of course, I would have been shocked if my successor never got a clean audit, because if you understand the auditing process, Sam.
No, ma'am, please answer the question.
If you're starting from a zero balance, which is where we started.
No, just answer the question.
No,
I can't. Answer the question. I will ask you if I want to know about balance sheets and all that. I'm asking you whether the institution did or did not have clean audits before until recently. It's a simple question, yes or no?
Progressively, it arrived at a clean audit eventually with the systems we put in place and the leadership we had. Progressively, it had to.
Yes, yeah. Okay, but I understand that. But it could have deteriorated, so it improved recently.
Well, from an audit point of view, you would say yes. Because every year, the points...
Thank you, ma'am. All right. Okay. Thank you. I thank you. All right. Then, so that's 9.1. So we know at least that there was this recent improvement in one of the areas. Okay. And then when it comes to the issues of, you know that one of the issues that bedevil any institution like that is the issue of backlogs, correct?
Yes.
Yes. And the evidence of Mr. Niels van der Merwe is that the backlogs are now at an all-time
low. An explanation. Why no one in Malawi?
Ruben. Apology both to yourself and Edward Matanzela. Honorable Ngola, don't we're not interested to hear who's talking there where you are. Please stay muted. Over to you, Advocate Mbofu.
Thank you. Now, I was saying, do you agree with the evidence of Advocate van der Merwe, which you may or may not have listened to, but I will tell you what it said, that we've been there since the beginning of time with the institution, that currently, because of the systems that are put in place, the backlogs are at a considerable all-time low.
I don't know what was the backlog before I arrived. I said I inherited a well-run institution. One of the things we had to deal with was the emphasis on speed versus rigor. And therefore the slowing down had to do with making sure that there was rigor.
Okay.
So I've never measured the office purely on the basis of backlog. Much as, in fact, in KZN, there was a time when they had cleaned up all of the cases, and they would have, of course, registered a new backlog. We went back and reopened all of those investigations because they were improperly closed. So we were concerned that justice should not be sacrificed at the altar of speed.
Okay. So one of the reports that we're going to deal with specifically sat on your desk, as it were, for something like 5 to 6 years. Is that what you mean by ensuring rigor?
Absolutely. I deal with it in my statement, if you will recall, sir. That's the one that I voluntarily chose to do against a decision of my team, and therefore it had to be my cross to bear.
Yes, no, I understand. I'm saying insofar as it went on for about 5 to 6 years.
Exactly, it was an outlier.
We want to attend conferences these things, and we hope, man.
Just pause. The last time, can somebody for the last time remove him from the platform?
Thank you, sir. All right, fine. Then we'll take that answer for now until we get to that report. Now, you then say that at 9.4, or let's start with 9.5. We'll come back to 9.4 when we come back. 9.4, you say, I resisted being spied on by the state security agency through sudden repeated requests to vet me as I was finalizing the Waterkloof landing incidents by the Gupta family. When you're saying you consider vetting by the state security agency as being spied on, is that how you characterize that?
No, sir.
And okay, what did you mean by...
Can I supplement my answer?
Yes.
I had been public protector for 4 years or even five. And as I was finalizing the Watercliff Landing matter, the last persons I interviewed, well, the last person I interviewed was from the State Security Agency. And then two things actually happened. A few days later, there was the first of those crazy spy stories. And then suddenly, in the middle of nowhere, the State Security Agency wanted to vet me. And this was the time when we knew that that agency was full of shenanigans, and we now know that it was captured. But I knew for a fact that this had nothing to do with trying to vet me. It had something to do with wanting to follow me with the permission of a judge. That's the context in which I'm talking about being spied on.
Being spied on. Okay, good. So, but you yourself were never vetted, correct?
I wasn't vetted. Public protection had never been vetted before me.
Yes. And you never had security clearance yourself, correct?
No, never did. Not for this post. I was vetted for other things as a consultant with government, including for work with the State Security Agency itself.
No, that's before. I'm saying as a public protector, you refused to be vetted. Let me withdraw that. As a public protector, you were in fact never vetted or got security clearance, correct?
Yes.
Yes. And
can you just get your last one so you can take a pause?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Just to wrap up that point, it is correct, isn't it, according to the evidence of one of the witnesses, that you are the person who authored the security clearance policy at the public protector before the arrival of Advocate Mkhwebane, correct?
That you'd have to check with the Auditor General. I didn't initiate the idea of staff being vetted. As one of the audit findings, we were talking about governance issues, it's the Auditor General that tells you what needs to be done. And one of the things the Auditor General said we needed to do was staff at a particular level needed to be vetted. And it didn't include the Deputy Public Protector, by the way.
No, I'm not talking about the Deputy Public Protector. I'm talking about you. I'll show you when we come back, because the chair wants to take a break now. I'll show you when we come back that you signed the policy that said people at a senior level should be vetted. But you're telling us that you yourself were not vetted. You were just, although you had access to those documents that are referred to in your policy, you were not, in fact, security cleared.
Yes, and I had done that for 5 years without it being an issue. And there was no policy that said the public protector must be vetted. And my predecessors, who were two, had never been vetted or security cleared.
Okay. Thank you. Let's pause there. We'll take a 45 minutes lunch and be back at 2:05. Thank you. We are
recording stopped.
Thank you.
We back at 2:05. We're going to resume with our inquiry. Let me quickly check if we are connected with honorable members. Honorable Malema, can you hear me? Honorable Zungula, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Chair.
Thank you. Professor Madonsela, can you hear us?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. We now proceed. Over to you, Advocate Mbofu.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to require your protection to deal with the questions. I'm going to try and ask them in a simple manner that requires short answers. But Chair, I just wanted to make references to the passages or the references in law that you are asking me to do. And I said that even I don't have all these things registered in my head without looking at them. The first one, Chair, is, and we'll deal with this obviously when we argue, but just for the record, it's the act that I told about, the 1963 Act, the regulations governing the administering of an oath for affirmation. If you go to Regulation 4.1, which is the one that I was dealing with the witness with about below, where there's a core signature, so to speak. Yeah. So it says, below the deponent's signature or mark, the commissioner of oaths shall certify that the deponent has acknowledged that he knows and understands the contents of the declaration, and he shall state the manner, place, and date of taking the declaration. Now, the point I was making to the witness, Chair, is that the interpretation of that signature or mark, a mark could even be just initialing. Below that, the commissioner has to certify. And that must not be confused with Regulation 4.1, and rather 4.2, which deals with the signature at the end of the statement, where it says the commissioner of oaths shall sign the declaration and print his full name and business address below his signature. So that's the reference to that, to the issue of signature. The other one,
thank you,
Chair. The other one, the witness challenged me to refer to Constitutional Court case to do with context. Yes, that, Chair, you'll find in many cases there, we found lots of SCA cases and so on. But one of the most recent ones is a judgment of Khampepe J in University of Johannesburg, the South Auckland Park Theological Seminar. I'll give the full, it's what we lawyers call neutral citation, Chair, is 2021 ZACC 13. But maybe when we add you, I'll give you the full quotation. You'll remember that, Chair, I'm sure you'll remember that virtually all the legally trained witnesses have asked that question, and they've confirmed it because it's so trite that to borrow from the witness, shocked. And this is what Justice Khampepe said. She started by quoting this from a poem, and I'll just read the stanza that she refers to. She says, I am writing this in a time when anything we write can be used against those we love, where the context is never given, though we try to explain over and over. For the sake of poetry, at least I know these things. And then starting the judgment, she says, this is Justice Khampepe now. I make bold to say that it is not just for the sake of poetry that the old adage, context is everything, holds true. In so many scenarios, words alone ring hollow. Context gives life and meaning to what is said or written. And all sorts of other things. But that's just one of the quotations for the, or the sources for the very well known in legal circles, at least, statement that context is everything. So, Chair, can we then just go back to the...
Yes, proceed, please.
Yes, the procedure. If you promise not to ask me to do rote learning of the whole law of South Africa. Okay. Right. Now, Professor, we were at the point where I was asking you whether, or at least you had confirmed that you were not vetted or cleared from a security point of view. I'm just going to ask this question in broad terms to cover what I will argue at the end, just to give you an opportunity to answer. Do you think, having read all the appropriate statutes and policies, including the MIS and the policy that you signed, do you think it's appropriate for the head of an institution to require those below her who handle certain information to be security cleared, but he or she is not security cleared, being the person who actually has access to everything that everyone else has access to? Do you think that's consistent with the intentions of MIS and the policy?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And do you want my explanation?
Pardon?
I'm very sure about that, and because there was correspondence between me and the State Security Agency when it tried to insert itself into the Public Protector's Office under this pretext.
Yes. No, ma'am.
Should I explain myself?
No, it's fine. I'm quite sure that there was such correspondence. I'm asking you a broader general question.
And the answer is yes, sir.
That it's appropriate to basically say to the people who report to you, do as I say, but not as I do. In other words, you who have access to those classified documents would then be breaching your own policy, wouldn't you?
Can I explain again, sir? The policy for the vetting of staff did not come from the Public Protector. It came from the Auditor General because of a decision from government to vet staff. Ministers have access to documents. They're not vetted. Judges have access to documents. They're not vetted. Members of Parliament have access to documents, they're not vetted, because there's an equivalent process to vetting that they go through. For example, when I was going to be appointed as Public Protector, there was a process of vetting or equivalent to vetting that the Department of Justice undertook. And this was the case for all of the Public Protector, and this is the case for the judges. I was recently involved in the selection of the Chief Justice. And it's the same process. And therefore, you are incorrect, sir, by suggesting that by not being vetted by an institution that had gone rogue at that particular time, and it was known, it was in the public domain that this institution had gone rogue. And that institution, I had been told by journalists, just after this last interview on the Gupta lending matter, that it was the institution responsible for the first spy story.
Yeah, okay. All right. I'm going to argue, maybe let me make it quick. I'm going to argue that it's inappropriate for head of an institution to impose a policy that says people at a particular level must have clearance. In other words, if you had these objections, then you should have the objections in principle rather than imposing it on other people, not on yourself. That's the first issue I'm going to argue. I've heard your response to that. That's fine. But I just want to move to the issue that you touched on, which I had not touched on. So basically, both you and the Deputy Public Protector were not security cleared.
As has been the institution since its inception.
I take that as a yes.
It is a yes.
Good. And in the case of the former the Deputy Public Protector, I think he spoke about this openly in the Portfolio Committee. One of the issues why he did he attempt to get security cleared?
Not during my time, because it was not a requirement. The Deputy Public Protector was not the first Deputy Public Protector. Advocate Shahi was the first Deputy Public Protector. For two terms, nobody tried to subvert her.
Yes.
And the two public protectors before me, for two terms, nobody tried to vet them. But there was an equivalent parliamentary process that I regarded as equivalent to vetting. And that's the open one where anybody can, during the process, bring in issues.
Ma'am, it's going to help us a lot if you just answer the question. So at that particular time, for all the good reasons you've mentioned, both you and the Deputy Public Protector were not security cleared, yes, no?
I've answered that question. I don't know what kind of answer do you want anymore, because and then I give you additional information.
If I can come in here, Professor Madonsela, you did answer the question. Perhaps you need to, I think he's asking for shorter answers.
Through you, Chair, my answer would be we were vetted in a different way, in that we went through the kind of vetting that you see in the United States, where MPs like yourselves are allowed to get as many people from the public to submit to you anything that they know about this person that they think makes them not a fit and proper person. So my view is that we were vetted, maybe not security cleared by the state security agency. And if I were to make that decision not to allow myself to be vetted by them at that particular point, I would still make it.
All right. And, okay. So, okay, fine. We'll take that as a yes again. And I wanted to say that in the case of Mr. Malunga, and I think this is something he spoke about openly, one of the issues that was raised for, or rather that might have solved his security clearance, was the fact that he came from Zimbabwe. You remember that?
I don't appoint deputy public protectors. I didn't know that because I had never asked him. I had never tried to get him voted because that was a parliamentary process.
Yes, okay. But you knew that he came from Zimbabwe?
No. I knew that he lived in Zimbabwe, he had lived in Swaziland. I didn't know where he came from. I never asked him.
Oh, come on, Advocate Madonsela. This is something that was being discussed in the public domain. That's fine. That's your answer. And
I never asked him.
Yeah, no, I know it's your answer. I just find it incredulous. Yeah. But anyway, that's fine. Mr. Malunga was called as a witness, but it was decided that he shouldn't come. So I don't think it would be unfair to discuss him in his absence. But you yourself, you were born in South Africa?
I was, certainly. You know that information, don't you?
No, I wasn't there when you were born, ma'am. I'm just...
I think it's in the public domain. Like you say, I should have known about Malunga. You should have known about me too.
Okay. So then you agree with me that you should have known about Malunga now?
Well, I'm saying by your logic, I don't agree with you. I'm just saying by your logic, then you should have known about me. It's not my logic, it's your logic.
I see. No, that's fine, ma'am. The public is listening. I was simply distinguishing. I was saying in your case, in his case, there was that issue, but that issue did not arise in your case. And so I'm just wondering, let me ask this question so that we move on to the next topic. When, for example, as you correctly say, this was raised with you when we were investigating the so-called Gupta landing at Waterkloof, don't you think that that particular issue, obviously the landing of a foreign plane in Waterkloof, which is a military airport, would be a matter dealt with by the SANDF and, among others, military intelligence? Don't you think that your lack of clearance, of cleared status, would limit you in investigating something like that, because it might involve documents to which somebody like you would not have access? And just, if you don't think so, just say so. Don't tell me why. If you do think so, just tell me.
I don't think so, in the same way that it doesn't limit judges. But you are correct. You are incorrect. Again, you've distorted what I said. Can I just correct you?
No, but you can't insult me at will like that. Chairperson, can you ask the witness to stop saying that I've distorted anything? She's been insulting me.
But you've done that, sir. Can I correct you?
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, sir. It's on the record. Everything that we're saying is on the record and there are people listening. I did not say that they asked to vet me for the Gupta landing. I said, as I was concluding that, the last witness that I interviewed was from the State Security Agency, and they knew where this whole investigation was going because we had done a forensic and we caught them lying. And shortly after that, two things happened. One was the spy story. The second thing was a letter requesting to vet me. The issue of me being not vetted and not having an objection to me accessing information was not in this case. It was within Kanda case. We discussed it and we agreed with the ministers concerned, the whole cluster of ministers that had been appointed by President Zuma to deal with me in this matter. We agreed that the Park Protector goes through public scrutiny that is similar to vetting, and therefore it was improper to refuse to give me the documents for Nkandla. That was a totally different thing, and it was agreed to. And then out of the blue, the State Security Agency wanted to vet me.
Thank you.
Not in relation to any case, just out of the blue. And they said it would be good for me to do that in writing.
Your point is well covered, Advocate Mbof. Advocate Mandela. Over to you, Advocate Mbof.
Thank you. All right. Now I'm going to start protecting myself because the chair is refusing to do so. Let me just tell you for now that your accusation that I was distorting information is unfounded. I have no reason to distort anything, madam. I'm just asking you questions. It is you who said in your statement that you resisted being spied on by the State Security Agency through sudden repeated requests to vet me as I was finalizing the Waterkloof landing incidents by the Gupta family. I'm simply asking, based on that statement of yours, which I now quoted verbatim so that you don't accuse me of distorting information, which would be highly unprofessional. But the issue I'm saying is that, don't you think, and you may agree or not agree, that for an investigation such as that one, it might be a limitation not to have access to certain documents when by its nature that investigation involves classified information?
It was being finalized, sir. So all of the investigation and access to documents had already been done. As my statement says, it wasn't before I did the investigation this was raised. It was when I interviewed the last person who was a member of the state security agency. A few days after that, when I'm talking finalizing an investigation, I'm talking writing the report, which for whatever strange reason, never saw the light of day.
Yes. Okay. Let's quickly go to the bundle C folder 2, item 27, please.
Are you winning, slow table? Okay.
Right. Thank you, Chair. If we go to the first page, the 1.1, it says, yeah, the Public Protector of South Africa depends on its personal information and assets to deliver services that ensure the health, safety, security, and economic well-being of South African citizens. It must therefore manage these resources with due diligence and take measures to protect them. Do you remember that?
No, I wouldn't remember it. It happened so many years ago, and we live in the digital age. But
okay.
I think my institution,
yeah.
My former institution.
Okay, okay. Okay, ma'am. Let's assume you don't remember it, but you can't dispute that it was part of the policy.
I cannot dispute that. I cannot see my signature on it because the policies that were signed by the Public Protector would have my signature on it. I have no reason to say yes or no.
Fine. Let's go to page 459.
If you show my signature, then I will say yes.
Let's go to page 459.